We're issuing a challenge. We're telling America's scientists and engineers that if they assemble teams of the best minds in their fields and focus on the hardest problems in clean energy, we'll fund the Apollo projects of our time. At the California Institute of Technology, they're developing a way to turn sunlight and water into fuel for our cars. At Oak Ridge National Laboratory, they're using supercomputers to get a lot more power out of our nuclear facilities. With more research and incentives, we can break our dependence on oil with biofuels and become the first country to have 1 million electric vehicles on the road by 2015. We need to get behind this innovation. And to help pay for it, I'm asking Congress to eliminate the billions in taxpayer dollars we currently give to oil companies. I don't know if you've noticed, but they're doing just fine on their own.
And so to Caltech, one of the greatest concentrations of brain power on Earth. That's where Cecina Hulley has a reactor that concentrates sunlight, just like a child using a magnifying glass. The extreme heat produced in the presence of a catalyst, rather like the chemical embedded in self-cleaning ovens, takes water and CO2 and makes a fuel. A fuel you can use in cars or wherever you like. It's potentially astounding, as President Obama noted just then.
So the research that's gotten quite a bit of attention recently has to do with using solar energy to make fuels like hydrogen or even methane, using input sunlight, water, and carbon dioxide. We do it in a way that's different from, I would say, many of the groups worldwide. So we do a process which involves converting the sunlight into heat and then using the heat to drive the chemical reactions.
Where does the oven cleaner come in?
Yes, I have not actually confirmed that cerium dioxide is used in ovens. I imagine that that is true. Cerium dioxide has the function of being a very good catalyst. In our case, it's catalyzing the reaction of interest, and it does so in the following way. When we heat the cerium dioxide up to high temperatures, it releases some oxygen. You can think of this as exhaling the oxygen. So it releases a little bit of oxygen, but the framework of the material remains intact. When we cool it back down, we cool it in the presence of water or carbon dioxide or both. And in the process of cooling it, that cerium dioxide would like to inhale oxygen and refill its crystal structure. And in that process, it steals the oxygen away from the water, steals it away from the carbon dioxide, and then produces the fuel of interest, which, again, could be hydrogen, could be a mixture of hydrogen and carbon monoxide, which is a fuel called syngas, synthesis fuel for making all sorts of liquid transportation fuels, or the fuel could be methane, which is natural gas.
So it wasn't you who began calling it an oven cleaner. It was somewhere in a press release, was it?
Correct.
To give it a homey kind of feeling. But you're talking about high temperatures. They're very high, aren't they? About 3,000 degrees C?
They're high temperatures, not 3,000 C. This is a conversion from C to F. That was 3,000 F. This is because the U.S. likes F in the popular press. In the scientific lab, we still use C.
So it struck me as a bit high.
Yeah. So our temperatures are 1,500 to 1,600 degrees C.
Which is still pretty hot.
It is still quite hot, but quite achievable, quite manageable.
So the energy in and the energy out obviously are beneficial in one direction, that you get lots more energy out, even though you have to put in such high temperatures.
Right. What we're doing is we're taking that solar energy, converting it to this very high temperature heat, and then using that to give us a chemical fuel that we can use whenever we want. The problem, of course, with solar energy is that it's not always there when you'd like it to be.
And what does this apparatus look like? A big lens?
So there are two components. One is the big lens, as you say, which has got to, it's a big concentrator, basically, which takes all that sunlight and concentrates it and focuses it down onto one point. And then there's the reactor, which sits essentially at that focal point. And that's the part that we built. The concentrator, we used an existing system that was available in Zurich.
So presumably you've been doing trial runs. How's it going?
Great. The trial runs work fantastic. So we did trial runs in my laboratory first without having to use the solar concentrator because, you know, we just need to know that it works on heat. So the source of the heat doesn't really matter, at least just to evaluate the material. And then we went, as I said, over to Zurich at the Paul Scherrer Institute to collaborate with a colleague there, Aldo Steinfeld, to use his solar concentrator and put our reactor on his instrument.
And out the other end, you get a chemical, you say?
Yes.
And so what do you do with that chemical? Do you transport it somewhere else?
It's up to you, the user, what you'd like to do with that chemical. So, again, we can make the fuel of choice. We can make hydrogen. We can make syngas. Again, this is the precursor to liquid transportation fuels. We can make methane. And any of these could be used either locally. So let's say you wanted to produce electricity at nighttime when you no longer had the solar energy, or you wanted to ship these fuels off to do transportation, whatever it is you'd like.
On what scale?
Well, you know, we did just check to make sure that the material that we're using is reasonably earth abundant. And cerium, so cerium dioxide is just cerium metal plus oxygen, cerium is about as abundant as copper.
Which is reasonably abundant.
Which is indeed reasonably abundant. And we went through and said, well, you know, could you make a reasonable number of these reactors and store a reasonable amount of energy? And the answer is yes. The resource base of cerium is big enough that it's significant.
And presumably it means that you can just make it when the sun's there and you can slow down when it isn't and you have a continuous supply.
Exactly. I mean, when the sun is shining, you run your reactor and create the fuel and you can store that for whenever you like. When the sun's not shining, you just don't run it. There's nothing lost in that scenario.
Now, there's a very impressive gentleman called Steve Chu in the United States who's advising your president on these energy options. Has he been made aware of your system?
I would like to believe yes. I would like to believe that when our president mentioned this in his State of the Union address that Caltech was doing work in the solar fuels area, that he was aware of what's going on in my lab.
If he did, and if you were to get funded to the level that you require, what would you need?
So there are two ways to move forward here. One is to say that the material systems that we've developed are sufficient, and what we need to do is build and design reactors that give us the efficiency that the materials themselves inherently have promised to yield. And I think that if we built better reactors, we could easily get to 10-20% efficiency for converting solar energy into chemical fuels. The other aspect where one could invest is to develop even better materials than this cerium dioxide. Now, whenever you invest in materials exploration, development, discovery, there's no guarantee that there's going to be an answer. And so those are the two areas. And look, we have a solar hub that's being funded nationally at a level of $122 million. I think that's a great investment. I think that in terms of the energy investment that we need in the country nationally, that is unfortunately a drop in the bucket. I mean, we nationally need to be putting huge resources behind renewable and sustainable energy if we're going to get to an answer which makes a difference for our planet. In my laboratory, of course, if we put some portion of that to advance what we're doing specifically here, it would make a tremendous difference.
Well, of course, we've got plenty of sunlight in Australia and we've got plenty of minerals. Anyone that you know of working in this field in Australia?
I have to say I do not know of laboratories in Australia working on this type of approach. The ones that I know of, it's a little bit funny. Places like Switzerland, not that much sunlight.
I was going to ask you about Zurich.
Yes, it is kind of amusing for me to describe to people that in March we went to Switzerland to find the sun leaving Southern California. Rather entertaining. Of course, that was a simulator, not actual real sunlight. Other laboratories pursuing this, University of Minnesota, again, not a place that has a whole lot of sunshine. Sandia National Labs, of course, that's a much better location, and now University of Florida. In Europe, southern Spain, of course, they have a major facility for solar concentration. I don't know how much is going on in terms of solar fuels as opposed to doing solar thermal in that case for electricity generation.
So there you are, solar chemical power, all happening at Caltech. Cecina Hulle is a professor of material science and chemical engineering, and a paper on that was published in the journal Science on the 23rd of December. That's the journal of the AAAS.